Are you ready to go? You need a few minutes?
I'm ready.
Well, it's not 5:30 by my thing yet, so.
It's now 5:30.
Oh, now it is. Okay. Everybody good? I'm going to go ahead and call the meeting to order. If you'd all please rise for the pledge.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, you want to call roll?
Mr. Adams is excused. Mr. Bassel?
Here.
Mr. Gibney?
Here.
Mr. Greiner?
Here.
Mr. Howell?
Here.
Mr. Kesselring?
Here.
And Mr. Schatt is excused. We have a quorum, sir.
Very good. All right. You want to read the notes?
Yes, sir. Cases heard by the Planning and Zoning Commission will be presented to City Council in accordance with the schedule provided after each case in the agenda. Please note that the City Council meetings will begin at 4 o'clock p.m. and are held at City Hall, City Council Chamber, second floor, located at 110 Southeast Wautula Avenue.
Thank you. Everybody have a chance to look over the minutes from the last meeting, and if so, we have a motion for approval or discussion?
If there's no discussion, I'll move to approve.
All right, I have a motion for approval.
Second.
And a second. Any discussion? Call the roll.
Mr. Batsell?
Aye.
Mr. Gibney?
Aye.
Mr. Howell?
Aye.
Mr. Kesselring?
Aye.
Mr. Greiner?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Very good. All right, moving right into it. The subdivisions, SUB 12-0008.
Karen Cupp, City of Ocala Growth Management Department, 201 Southeast 3rd Street, 2nd floor. The first item is, the first plat for presentation is CR Ocala plat. This plat is 1.44 acres. It's the second split of a larger parent parcel, the parent parcel which still remains in the county. This piece of property has recently gone through the annexation and the land use and zoning for it. We are also currently reviewing a site plan for development of this lot. Subdivision infrastructure is in place. They will be connecting to water and sanitary sewer from Northwest 52nd Avenue, which is also where they will access the lot. The engineering department is recommending approval subject to completion of legal review. And I spoke with the city attorney's office, Assistant City Attorney Jimmy Gooding, and he had no issues with this being presented to you for recommendation of approval or denial.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for staff? Good. Okay. Thank you. Is the owner of the property here? I'd like to add anything to that.
I'm the agent, CH.
Okay. Step to the podium, please. Name and address for the record.
Ryan Thompson, a planner with CHW, agent for the owner, 132 Southwest 76th Place. Gainesville, Florida. Here to answer any questions you may have.
Okay. Any questions? Okay. All right. Thanks. We'll open it up for public discussion. If you have anything to say for or against, step forward, please. Okay. We will close that off, bring it back to the board for discussions or motions.
I'll move approval.
I have a motion for approval.
Second.
And a second. Without any further discussion, call the roll.
Mr. Kesselring?
Aye.
Mr. Howell?
Aye.
Mr. Batsell?
Aye.
Mr. Gibney?
Aye.
Mr. Greiner?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Very good. Okay. SUB 12-0007.
The plat before you is for the Heathbrook Frontage Park Phase 1. This is a one-lot commercial plat with 0.55 miles of road being dedicated to the perpetual use of the public. The platted lot will be on the corner of State Road 200 and Southwest 48th Street. We are currently reviewing a site plan for the development of that lot. The lot will not be able to get under construction until The construction phase of this plat is completed, which is a relocation of a DRA currently adjacent to Southwest College Road, being moved southeasterly of what is currently known as Tartan Road. That DRA relocation will need to be completed before work can start on the proposed development on this platted lot. The developer's agreement submitted is for the construction and the relocation of the drainage retention area. We also have included a separate utility easement for the water and sanitary sewer lines, as well as the lift station that are actually outside the boundaries of this plat. The DRA, the drainage retention area easement, will be recorded simultaneously with the plat. The recording information will be filled in on the plat before the plat is recorded. Excuse me. Assistant City Attorney Jimmy Gooding completed his review early last week, and in order that this plat could move forward for approval or denial by this board, he had produced a letter because he realized that the changes would not be able to be made to the documents in order to get in this packet. But he had given the okay to bring it before you. And the recommendation for the plat, the Ninth Amendment to the developer's agreement, and the easements is subject to completion of legal review.
Okay. Any questions?
Yeah, well, Mr. Chairman, just for the record, I'm actually a consultant on the site plan that's going on one of these spots. I don't think that it has an impact on this plat, but I thought that I needed to at least mention it for the record.
Okay. All right. Does he need to fill out a form or anything for that? Or?
I don't think.
Yeah, I'm not declaring a conflict of interest. Okay. I just wanted to make sure it was on the record.
The record.
Right. Gotcha. Okay. Okay. Any questions for staff? Nope. Okay. Thank you. Is the owner petitioner here like to say anything? Just state your name and address for the record.
Good evening. My name is Chris Roper, attorney for the landowner, Ocala Trophy. My address is 420 South Orange Avenue, Suite 1200, Orlando, Florida, 32801. We're here to answer any questions. Appreciate staff's support of this request. If there are any engineering-related questions, we have engineers here, Chris Quinn and Mike Radcliffe from Radcliffe Engineering. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions? Very good. Okay. All right. We'll open it up to for public discussion at this point. Just step forward if you have anything to say for or against. And I guess everybody's waiting for the same thing. Bring it back up to the board for discussions or motions.
I move for approval.
Have a motion for approval.
I'll second.
And a second. And without any discussion, okay, we'll call the roll.
Mr. Howell?
Aye.
Mr. Petzl?
Aye.
Mr. Gibney?
Aye.
Mr. Kesselring?
Aye.
Mr. Kreiner?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Okay. I wonder if some of those guys have to come up and talk out there. All right, what do we got? Annexation ANX 12-0008.
Good evening, Patty Hitchcock for the City of Ocala Growth Management Department. This is an annexation petition of the McMonagle Family Trust. David Harden is the agent. It seeks annexation of 0.72 acres located on the north side of West Highway 40, about halfway between Northwest 55th Avenue and 60th Avenue. The city has previously annexed two other properties, one to the east and one to the west on the north side of Highway 40 in this area. The annexation is requested in order to obtain city water and sewer services. The family has not submitted a site plan at this time, but we have had some conversations about proposed development on this property, and we will be bringing to the board next month a petition for a land use change to an appropriate city designation, which if it were under the current plan would be neighborhood business. But on the future 2035 plan, right now I believe it's showing as an employment center, but we would be recommending approval of B1 neighborhood business commercial zoning in this area. The properties to the east and west here that are within the city limits also have B1 zoning. This is a picture of the property from Highway 40 looking north. The property to the east is a tack shop. And to the west, there is a single-family home, and west of that is a two-bay retail store. To the north, we do have residential properties. The property is bounded between Highway 40 and Northwest First Street. And north of Northwest First Street, there are some single-family homes. But the area along State Road 40 is predominantly commercial. We do recommend annexation, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for staff? Okay, thank you. Would the petitioner like to add anything to that?
Good evening. I'm David Harden with American Heritage. I'm joined tonight by the owner, Mr. McConnell. And we don't have anything to add, but we're here to answer any questions that you may have.
Okay. Any questions?
Can I have his address, please?
Address. We need address.
7325 Southwest 32nd Street.
Thank you.
Other questions? Okay. All right. We'll open it up for public discussion. All right, close that off. Bring it back to the board.
I'll move approval.
Have a motion for approval?
I'll second.
And a second. All right, call the roll.
Mr. Kesselring?
Aye.
Mr. Batzler?
Aye.
Mr. Gibney?
Aye.
Mr. Howell?
Aye.
Mr. Greiner?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Very good. Okay, now abrogation, ABR12-0004.
Patty Hitchcock again for the City of Ocala Growth Management Department. This is a petition of Highland Memorial Park Association for abrogation of a 40-foot wide right-of-way that contains driveways internal to the cemetery, as well as an unimproved 40-foot wide right-of-way that runs east and west along the northern boundary of the cemetery. It's an interesting situation. With regard really to this northern, the northern right-of-way that runs east and west. It's 40 feet wide. It was established in, I'm sorry, this is the plat that contained the Pine and the Park Drive and the Hillcrest Drive. That property is really acting only as driveways internal to the cemetery. I think most of the people in the audience are probably here because of the right-of-way that runs east and west, the 40-foot wide right-of-way that was shown first in 1923 on this old plat of the Gray Farm. It's shown as a 40-foot right-of-way running east and west. It's 1923. And when the Hilldale property was platted, it actually calls along the southern boundary of Block C that 40-foot wide right-of-way was shown on the gray plat, and that the southern 20 feet is occupied by the cemetery. We have an old transaction from 1950 where Ludwig Olson conveyed to Curtis Newsom the north half of that 40-foot wide right-of-way. And a lot of the neighbors along the own lots 139 and Block C have a deed that came from previous transactions from Mr. Newsom. 1950, Ludwig Olson sold it to Mr. Newsom. And in 1952, I believe it was, Mr. Newsom conveyed it to the owners of lots 1 through 9. The issue is our records don't show anything from 1923 when the right-of-way appeared on the plat to 1950. We don't show that the right-of-way was ever vacated or abrogated. So we don't know whether or not Mr. Olson had a right to convey it to Mr. Newsom, and whether Mr. Newsom had a right to convey it to those property owners. And this all came about when the cemetery was having a survey conducted, because they're concerned about the southern 20 feet of that right-of-way that they believe they own. So we're going through this process this evening in order to clear up any title concerns. When the right-of-way, when that 40-foot right-of-way is abrogated, the north 20 feet will clearly be owned by those residential lots, and the southern 20 feet will clearly be owned by the cemetery. This graphic shows the black crosshatching is the 40-foot wide right-of-way, and the red line are the property lines for the residences. So I know there's been some concern that perhaps the cemetery was trying to take title to all 40 feet. They're just trying to clean up the title to the southern 20 feet, and while they were processing the petition, they included all of it to clean up the title for those nine lots as well. Staff recommends approval of the abrogation as these rights of way are not needed, and to clear up this title issue. And I'm here to answer questions.
Okay. Patty, just in a normal course, if we were going to abrogate a road, half of it would go to the property owners on one side of the road and half of it would go to the others.
That's correct.
So in effect, this isn't anything different than what would happen if there was already a road there and we were dividing.
That's correct.
So the net result is that the residents up there are going to have exactly what they have today.
That's correct.
What they think they have today.
Thank you. Yes. And perhaps there was a document between 1923 and 1950, but you know, there's no record of it. So we just want to clear up everyone's title.
And so the portion to the furthest east of that 40-foot right-of-way that doesn't show that any properties kind of dip down into it, that whole 40 feet is going to be, sorry?
No, the northern 20 feet will go to those three lots.
Okay.
And the southern 20 feet will go to the cemetery.
Okay, so those three lots on the eastern side are going to gain more property.
That's correct. They they were not included in the 1952 deed.
Any more questions? Okay, thanks. Would the agent like to add anything?
Rodney Rogers with Rogers Engineering, 1105 Southeast 3rd Avenue. It's like Patty says, this was a finding of the title work, basically, and in the process of the survey. We kept digging and kept finding more. Well, digging not a good word in this particular area, but this right of way was created by this plat. This plat didn't really have any lots on it. It was an old plat of CF something farms or something, just big giant tracts, and it just has no name, and it's just a little east-west strip that's shown on that plat. But over time, there was subsequently a plat recorded over the top of the south 20 feet down to a certain way. That plat was recorded by Moorhead Engineering Company in 1960 or 61 or something like that. They included the 20 feet, the south 20 feet, in that plat without any mention of the underlying road, whether or not it was closed or abrogated or whatever. So they kind of just platted right over the top of that. And Mr. Hires at the time, you know, believing that everything was done like he was supposed to be done, he developed a cemetery over the south 20 feet of it, and there is, in fact, some burials in that 20 feet. But the fact is we're not proposing any at all physical changes to the ground that's out there, the land. No changes to fences, no changes to the character of it. This is entirely done to clean up the cloud that's on the title. The lots that are on that are bordering this that have the quitclaim deeds granted to them, like Patty said, that's vague whether or not that was a valid conveyance by that man that conveyed it to him in 1950-something. So as a matter of some house cleaning, the city or those lot owners, after this, if this abrogation goes through and it's final, may want to get some quick claim deeds or something from the city to them to more validate this. More specifically, the last three lots down there that never really got one from anybody in 1953. They're going to now get the 20 feet. The way the plat law says is the lots on each side of an abrogated road get half of the road. The vagueness of this is those lots weren't there on the plat that the road was created on. That's how it's supposed to happen. The platted lots of the plat where the right-of-way was created get half each. But this kind of happened altogether differently, so it's not really any of our concern, but we would like to follow through once abrogation is done and subsequently get a quick claim deed from the city on the south half of that right of way, because just like the lots up there, our property was not lots bordering that right of way either. So I think for a real cleared up, put this to bed forever, when we get it all finished, if we quick claim deed that off to everybody, it's final, it's done. But also wanted to assure anybody that's curious about why are we doing this, has absolutely nothing to do with the physical characteristics of the property. Now it's going to remain exactly as it is. The other two streets are inside of a little portion called Hillcrest Cemetery. It's over there to the west. Why they were dedicated to the public, I have no idea. They've never been a city street. They've always been a little paved paths that go through that cemetery. There's no city utilities in there. I think it was just a matter of back in the day when they created plats, anything that wasn't being sold as a grave or a plot, they granted it to the public or whatever. But that too is just, when, of course, we own all the land around that, the cemetery owns all the land around that, so abrogating that automatically gives us all of that right away. So we're not worried about following up with quick claim deeds or anything like that with those two drives. But it may be in the best interest of everybody involved is once this abrogation is done on that north 40 feet, kind of clean it up with some final deeds so that it's done finally. And if you got any questions, I'll be glad to answer.
Jeff, any questions? Your res good? Okay. All right, we'll open it up for the public. I see a public back there getting ready to come up here.
Yeah, I'm a little confused. I'm the one that lives on that street.
Okay. Just state your name and address for the record.
Casisa Lewis, 1568 Northeast 8th Street. Okay, this little way, I'm not quite understanding, okay, because I'm one of the...
Which one are you?
I'm the... Go over one more to the right. No, the other one. Yep. I'm right there. Okay, so I'm a little confused. It's a little alleyway that the kids use to go to school and not to school. Does that mean that it's going to be closed up?
That's
going to completely stay open, that they could still go. Okay, because that's my main concern with my kids.
Other than the fact, though, that you will gain an extra 20 feet.
Yeah, you'll actually own that little alley.
Yeah.
Well,
so how do I get that half of it? Right now, you were never deeded the 20 feet, like at these lots, you can see they're deeper than yours,
mm-hmm.
because they were deeded rightfully or wrongfully on this 20 feet. You will now own this 20 feet, and you will want to request the city, after this application is approved, the city council, mm-hmm. if you want to request it for any deed, we can do that.
Okay.
They cleared it up for you?
Yeah,
okay. All right.
Let me say one thing just to clear that little alleyway that the kids walk down. That little pathway is entirely on the cemetery parcel. The fence line that Mr. Harris put up is actually 10 feet. He gave up 10 feet of his 20 feet. He held his fence 10 feet off of the property line. for the cemetery fence because the kids were walking back between the two schools or to their houses or whatever. So the 20 feet that you would be gaining or that the other lots own is not, does not include that pathway that the kids walk on. That is on the cemetery land, and it's going to remain. There's no plans to make any changes on that at all as far as moving the fence. There's nobody buried in it 10 feet or anything like that. So there's, like I said, I'm going to start off and try to make y'all comfortable that there's no physical changes going to happen out there at all, and unless y'all make changes once you get 20 more feet, you may want
to. Right. So just to clarify while you're standing there, if she wants to extend her fence down 20 feet to the property line, then it's not going to block off the pathway whatsoever.
Well, yeah, the cemetery fence is 10 feet into their property.
Right.
What you would end up be owning to would be to a point 10 feet north of that cemetery fence, which your fence, if you have a fence, your fence is probably roughly 30 feet. Or
it's even with all the others. It's even.
You got it.
All right, forget it. Forget it.
It's all the way down. Completely even.
Oh boy. Okay. Okay. Anybody else from the public? Okay. We'll close the public discussion portion and bring it back to the board.
Chairman, I'll move for approval.
We have a motion for approval.
Second.
And a second. Call the roll.
Mr. Kesselring?
Aye.
Mr. Howell?
Aye.
Mr. Batsel?
Aye.
Mr. Gibney?
Aye.
Mr. Greiner?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Very good. Okay, now we have code amendment COD-12-0011.
Patty Hitchcock again. The city code does not, the city code prohibits electrified fences except in A1 zoning districts for the confinement of livestock. We had a code enforcement case earlier this year when one of our building inspectors discovered an electrified fence around a freight carrier in our M1 zoning district. So we had conversations with the freight carrier as well as the installer of the electrified fence, and they came into compliance simply by cutting the power to the electrified fence, but we agreed to have conversations with them about whether or not a code amendment could be supported. And initially, I think everyone approached on staff had some concerns, but in meeting with Ms. Geisel from Sentry Security Systems, we became less concerned about how these are installed and agreed to bring forward a code amendment. But had some issues really more from an aesthetic approach as to how these would appear from the street. So I know Ms. Geisel has some interesting slides and information about how these electrified fences work. The bottom line for us was that it's the current is sent through the wires in short pulses. It's not a steady current. So you touch it during one of the pulses, you will feel it, but it's not something that will keep you attached to it and cause you any medical harm. There's also a dual fence requirement so that you've got plenty of warning not to go through the chain link fence and come in contact with the electric wires. They're also in close proximity so that someone, if they go over the chain link fence, does not get caught between or trapped between the chain link fence and the electric fence. So they're in close proximity to avoid the entrapment. And also the electrified fence operates off a marine battery that's charged by a solar panel. Our issues had to do with where would we be able to support electrified fences. And we felt that restricting them to the industrial zones where we have outdoor storage would be the most appropriate and not having them be applied throughout the city. We initially recommended that they not be allowed adjacent to residentially zoned properties, but we do have some industrial property adjacent to residential, and the concern there was that you might have, you know, children in the backyard, even old children in the backyard, that might be tempted to reach through the fence and have the experience of how much current really is going through the electrified wires. But we think that can be accommodated by having some sort of solid barrier. I had proposed in the ordinance a concrete masonry wall. I know Ms. Geisel has some other ideas that we can discuss with the board. The other was, we didn't want to see these electrified fences in the front yards of the property. Outdoor storage is restricted to side and rear yards. And we felt that the electrified fences should not be forward from any front plane of a structure to the street. And in order to ensure compliance with the ordinance, we're not looking to issue a building permit or an electrical permit. They don't connect to our grid. They're operating off of a freestanding battery, low voltage, with a solar panel charger. However, we do want to have plans and specifications to ensure compliance with this code, and also to have record keeping so that we can make all this information available to our emergency responders and have their emergency contact information on record, readily available. So we would handle this by a new type of license. We would create an electrified fence license, something that would be renewed annually to make sure that we have the most current contact information. I'm happy to answer any questions, but you may want to hear some additional information from Ms. Geisel.
I just have two quick questions. Patty, with the two fences,
mm-hmm.
how much distance between the two fences?
I think they have to be less than 18 inches apart.
It can't be less than 18 inches, so it's got, is that what?
No, I think there was a maximum of 18 inches apart.
3 to 12. A maximum?
12?
Yeah, I mean, what you want is you don't want somebody to be trapped between there, so I assume that there must have been some minimum distance that they had to be apart.
Yeah.
I don't know if I saw that.
That was the question I had, too, because I didn't see it on there either.
And then the other question, maybe I shouldn't ask it while you're looking. Well, maybe we need to add.
We need to add that.
Yeah, we need to add that.
Yeah, it probably should be more than 18 inches, though.
So
longer than 18 inches.
Should it be more or should it be less?
Well, that's the thing. If you go more, then and there's more space, then somebody can fall in and get trapped.
Well, right.
But if you go closer, they can reach to and touch it easily.
Right. So, well, I think what they want enough room that if you touch it and then and it knocks you off the fence, you have room to get away from it
right.
and get away.
Right.
You know, climb back over because you're not going through. I think that's the intent of having the.
That's what I would think.
The Boynton Beach ordinance had not more than a foot.
It actually says shall be 1 foot, I believe.
Yeah.
Wow.
The separation between the non-electrified perimeter fence and the electrified fence shall be 1 foot.
That doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, because you can certainly reach.
Well, and that was, you know, our initial concern when it
when our
code enforcement officer came back, because you can reach through the chain link fence and touch it.
Yeah, but if it's next to a residential use.
Well, I guess that was going to be my question. You know, in the way that it's written, you wanted the concrete wall, but what you really want is just a solid permanent wall.
Yes.
Or a solid permanent structure. And that can be lots of different materials.
It could be. And that's what I said. It could be, you know, the posts that set and then the panels that slide in.
Right, yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of different products out there.
Yeah, we got all kinds of different things that can come up that are probably less costly than a concrete wall.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, so have you thought about language to changing that to what we just talked about?
I will.
Okay. That's all I have.
Okay. I had the same question, so that's a very good question.
I'm proud.
Any other questions? Okay. Would the petitioner like to add anything? Okay, time's up. Sorry.
Cindy Gassell, Century Security Systems, 121 Executive Center Drive, Columbia, South Carolina. First, I want to thank Ms. Hitchcock and her staff of code enforcement and first responders for agreeing to meet with us and to consider this. We got a lot of things cleared up, I think, and allayed a lot of concerns in those meetings and presentations about the product. I do have some slides that if you have questions, I'll be glad to show them to you. I don't want to inundate you with information if you don't have any concerns, but let me address the two that you've just spoken about. The space between the two fences is usually about 3 to 12 inches. You don't want to go further than 12 for a couple of reasons. One is you don't want to create an entrapment zone. Second is these type businesses, the customers that are our niche customer is a trucking terminal like an ABF Freight or AAA Cooper, an equipment rental company like a United Rentals or a Sunbelt Rentals, an auto salvage yard or an auto recycler, something like that. Sometimes landscaping companies like us too. These are people that have outside storage. Typically their yards don't have a lot of perimeter around the boundary, and so you don't want to take up 3 feet of their space all the way around. They just don't have that property to give up. But there's also, if you look at, let's see, it's F2 of the proposed ordinance, it talks about that the electric fence would follow the International Electrotechnical Commission. Those guidelines, that's because there is no national standard for electric security fences. There's only an international standard for electric security fences. The reason there being is because it's not in the NEC because it's not attached to the grid. It's a completely independent battery-operated system. NEC does not cover that. In that IEC standard, which specifically states to the installation of electric security fences, it states that the fence should be 4 to 8 inches, I believe. It's in millimeters and you convert it. I believe it comes up 4 to 8 inches. Again, you don't want to create any kind of entrapment zone. It's always surrounded by a fence, completely surrounded by a fence. Usually it's a chain link fence. Sometimes it's a solid fence, sometimes it's a wooden fence, whatever. But a chain link fence has an aperture of about 2 inches and you can't really get your hand through a 2 inch. A child could, but we're going to have some kind of solid screening or structure around the outside of a residential. But a child would get the same type, actually less of a shock than an adult would. It is as Patty mentioned, it is a quick but an unpleasant, safe but memorable experience. It will not harm you. It is pulsed. It is 1/10,000th of a second in duration. It's similar to your agriculture fences, except it does not plug into the grid. It is battery powered and solar panel charged, so it's also green. And that also means it protects these businesses. If there was a power failure, they would still have security, perimeter security protection. So the distance there, another reason you can't go any further than that is because we are a standalone system everywhere except for the gate. And in order to make this viable for the customers, we need to move when the gates move. You can't have a separate fence 18 inches off of a gate, or it's not sturdy, it's not, it's too inflexible. It will not withstand movement of the gate. We attach to the gate with pole connectors, and we're probably 3 or 4 inches off of the gate. That Boynton Beach ordinance, actually, they did go back and changed it because they realized once we installed that we couldn't go off 12 inches off a gate. So it is 12 inches around, but it is attached on the gate. So we do need to be closer than 18 inches. Again, the IEC, the standard for electric security fences, states 4 to 8 inches. I believe that's correct. The other thing I would state is, again, our customer niche are those people who have outside storage. Ms. Hitchcock had confirmed to me that outside storage is not allowed in anything but your industrial zones. However, I did just hear you say M1 was the freight trucking terminal in M1?
Yes.
That's industrial.
That is industrial.
Okay, perfect. I thought that would be a manufacturing or something. Okay, that's industrial. So that's great. As long as, I just want to make sure I'm on record saying that if that is where your outside storage is, like your United Rentals, your trucking terminals, then we're fine with that because that is the customer niche that typically wants these systems. The thing that she stated about, the requirement she stated about having it an electrical license, that is great so that you do know where it is. We also install a Knox box for the fire department so they will know where we are located because we have to go to them to get their Knox box code in order to order the Knox box. So the fire department should know everywhere, but this electric fence license is a great way to police this. I commend you for that. I need to use that in other jurisdictions, which I hope you'll allow me to do. The masonry wall, thank you for realizing that a masonry wall is very cost prohibitive. So any kind of solid wall screening that we can do against residential would be helpful if it does not have to be concrete. I think that was the only thing that I had questions. I have some pictures of some slides if you need to see anything or have any questions. Oh, the other thing was about the street frontage. Can I just put these on? Yeah. Let me just show a couple of things here. She also has informed me that going forward, you're not going to allow outside storage in the street frontage. There may be some grandfathered places that I would be concerned about. For example, this is not here in Ocala, but this is an example of a United Rentals in Lakeland, Florida. These are all Florida pictures. If you did not allow this fence forward of the front plane of the building, this customer would lose a lot of their storage space. If you don't have any grandfathered customers, it wouldn't be an issue here, but if you did have some that didn't have space all around their building, that could be a problem. Again, we are protected from the innocent public by a perimeter fence. If you're concerned about the aesthetics, we could bring the front portion, if there is a street frontage necessity, because that's where their perimeter fence is, we could bring that down to 8 feet, which would, or the same height as the perimeter, as the fence on the front, so that you would not really see this fence. Here's another example of a trucking terminal. That also has parking and storage all around the four sides. Like the building is not set on the property line or it's not set in the front. In many cases, a lot of these buildings are set back in the middle so that the trucks can go all the way around the building and they'll be set in the middle of the property. And if we could not build forward of the front plane of the building, sometimes that's an issue. I would appreciate some consideration if these were grandfathered in and did allow that type of you know, pavement or construction or storage around all four sides of the building, as is evidenced in pictures in some of your sister cities. And I think that's all I have. I'll be happy to answer any questions or show. Let me, Patty, can you pull that up? Can you go to page, so I can show them what it looks like? Page 17. Sorry. I've moved it. Move back to that mark here. This is a picture of the fence, what it looks like. If you see the strands, you see a chain link fence, and then you see the single strands of wire on the inside, on the private property side of that fence. That's what the fence is. That's what our fence is. If you look at where we would be above an 8-foot fence, it's three single strands of wire. They're 8 inches apart at the top, so you're talking about three strands of wire between the 8-foot and the 10-foot. That's all you would see. The aesthetics of the fence, generally when someone is passing by, they see a fence, basically a chain link fence. The way I find my fences is I look for the yellow signs that are posted that say warning electric fence, which is important that you have to have those on there. Other than that, you really see a fence. So I would ask for those considerations and any questions that you have, I'll be happy to answer.
Yeah. Any questions?
Do you have any, I heard you mention screening.
Yes.
I mean, have you seen it work elsewhere? I mean, my concern is, and I know we're providing for masonry walls next to residential areas, but my concern would be if it's just a screen or just a regular fence and it's only going to be 4 to 8 inches back or even a foot back that, you know, a child walking by. I mean, the example you gave was there was a sidewalk in front, so clearly there's going to be people right next to it, reaches through and grabs it. And I know you said there was less of a shock to children than adults, which is interesting too.
It's very counterintuitive. Electricity looks for a path, and in a child, that path is smaller. Think about where it's going to go through their body. That's a smaller path, so they actually get less of a shock than a larger person would. Either way, though, they're not going to have a health issue. It's not going to be a harm. We provided all of that documentation to the city staff and the first responders, and they were very, you know, satisfied with the safety of the fence. It does provide, like I said, a safe but a memorable shock. You won't forget it, and you're not going to want to do it again. Some things that we have done against residential is you can slat. You know, if it's a chain link fence that's on the outside, you can slat that with metal slats that totally closes off the, you know, a child could not stick their hand.
There's always a requirement for a fence, something solid between residential and industrial.
Okay, so that's not even solid new. That's big. Not even,
I mean,
new.
Because I was just thinking of the I don't even know what material.
Like the green screening,
like a green,
the mesh.
Like a screen.
Some
blocks.
Places do allow that. I know. The city of Palm Beach County has just, we're in the process of getting this approved there, and they are allowing some green mesh screening against a residential park that's next, not a park, but a residential building, trailer park, that's next to one of the locations. I can understand, if your code already accounts for that it's a requirement anyway, then this would kind of be a moot point, that you would always require it, as long as you don't require it to be a concrete wall. That is prohibitively expensive to any person. It also takes up a lot of space. It takes up, you know, a lot of space in their yard.
One quick question, kind of more out of curiosity. What would happen if you had the chain link fence, tree falls on the fence, ends up laying up against the electric fence? Is that obviously not your chain link fence is?
That's a good question. The customers that, it's in their contract that they have to keep it vegetation free, because the thing that makes this system actually is truly a burglar alarm also. This is a single circuit system. If the circuit is broken for more than 5 seconds, then it becomes an audible burglar alarm and a monitored burglar alarm. So like an ADT home security or Brinks home security, it actually dispatches to the terminal manager. So therefore, if something falls on it and cuts the circuit or grounds it out for more than 5 seconds, it won't work. So the businesses have to keep it vegetation free. We actually supply them with Roundup type products every month to do so.
Well, but I mean, if this is next to a piece of property that's got a tree on somebody else's property, falls into it, I mean, you know, you can't
ground it out.
Well, and
it would ground it out.
Yeah,
well, and it would set off.
You can't tell that neighbor to cut their tree down because they got a fence going up.
Well, and I guess that raises the other question about the buffer requirements that we have, you know, whether it's against a residential property or not, there's buffer requirements. So there's hedges and trees that are required.
And we can deal with landscaping. Landscaping's not a problem. It's just that we have to keep, because the landscaping will be on the outside of the perimeter fence.
Yeah.
So, you know, we can make sure it's trimmed up if necessary between the two fences.
To keep it off. And then if a tree falls, like you say, then it just
It has to be
out.
Cleaned up. Yeah. Just has okay. to be.
To well, just clean. Like this picture. Got landscape on the house.
Well,
right. Yeah, they do. Right.
Yeah. Having an electrical fence is not going to avoid landscape requirements for
Correct.
Buffering. So in other
Correct.
Words, if there's a requirement already in our code for a masonry wall,
yes,
then,
sir.
Then, you yeah, know, then, it that, then it is what it is. Right. But yeah, I'm not
Correct.
In favor of creating an additional requirement for masonry for an electrical fence.
Could I ask Pete a question? Pete, in the code, you know, that says that there has to be that wall. Do we specify that it has to be a concrete block wall?
We've, in the past, we've made it concrete, but we have given down to, you know, the prefab fences.
Yeah,
with the posts and
slats. Because I seem to remember even that I've worked on something where we've used the concrete panel.
Yeah, and panel walls. That's what more typical.
It requires a wall, but not necessarily a concrete block wall.
So whatever you require now, your businesses would be used to that and would be accepting of that, rather whether they had our fence or not. That requirement, it sounds like that requirement would be there, whether they had an electrical security fence or not.
We require, if you are residential adjacent to industrial, it's either 10 feet with a wall or 25 feet of landscaping. So if they were to opt for the 25 feet of landscaping, we could end up with the chain link and the electric. So we'd still want to specify that there'd be some solid screening if someone goes for the 25-foot. If it's, they're going 10-foot with a wall.
Yeah, most businesses probably aren't going to go 20-foot. They probably don't have that land to give up. Yeah.
Another question, more for Pete or Patty, about the fencing on the front. We've got it at the front of the building.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, you can see from this picture.
Is that going to affect any properties?
The way that I see it, you have three extra strands. One of the things that, you know, when I ride down the road, I don't love barbed wire and concertina when I go down the street. You're going to have 10 feet. You're going to have several extra feet of single wire above the fence.
Do we have any
I'm asking. I mean, do we have any properties where we allow storage out in front
of the
front
building? Yeah, we do in
M2.
Not typically. There are some B5 properties that right now would be affected if they would use this.
And if it is on street frontage, we can bring it down to the height of what your fence requirement is on that front.
Yeah, I was going to have a question for y'all as to, it says electrical fences shall have a height of 10 feet. Is that shall not exceed a height of 10 feet, or they have to be 10 feet?
When we initially met, we didn't do the 10 feet, so you are have a disincentive for someone trying to go over the chain link fence. You know, so you don't.
Well, shouldn't we probably change it to where it's
maximized?
That's the maximum height.
Well,
way, if you're going to put it, if we're going to talk about putting it on the front of a property, in front of a building, along the front, then we can have it as a requirement to where it can't be above that fence height.
The top element of the fence.
Right.
And let me address that quickly, if I may. That would be a great requirement for the road frontage. That would help solve the problem of having a full perimeter security if we could go at the maximum allowable height on road frontage. However, on the sides and the rear, we need to be 2 feet taller than the maximum height. And let me kind of demonstrate that for you. You have two fences. This is your perimeter fence, and this is our fence. They're the same height.
Right.
Again, this perimeter fence is never electrified. Let me state that one more time. That perimeter fence, be it chain link, whatever it is never electrified. So you could walk up, touch that, you can climb that, and you could hop right over if they're both 8 feet. With the additional 2 feet, then you create a barrier that people can't get over, because you can't climb the electric fence. So you could climb the 8 feet of the perimeter fence, but you could not then just hop over the electrified fence. So it does need to be, and that's what most city codes will say. 10 feet is, most city codes will say 2 feet above what's allowable in that zone.
So how would you get back over?
Well, you wouldn't, but you would either.
Well,
there's
ways to defeat
this fence.
I was trying to come up with the compromise that you talked about before, because I don't think anyone would like to see 2-4 feet of fence above.
Right,
and I'm
fine with that.
Yeah,
I think that I would be fine with a 6-foot fence, behind a 6-foot fence, up to the edge of the front of a building, going up to the 10 feet.
I'm agreeable with that. I think that's a good compromise if you especially to take care of grandfather.
Because I know
it was an aesthetic consideration. That's what
is it.
Right.
Is Sunbelt on 27? Is that in the city?
Yes.
Yeah.
All the rental. Yeah. That's what I was. The rental centers. You had Sunbelt, Walton, KWI,
KWI,
and
You know, the buildings are in the middle of the, more
correct.
Toward the center of the
that's
side.
What happens.
Right. You've got perimeter fences.
And it was absolutely an aesthetic consideration.
Yeah, I mean,
so that's fine.
If we allow storage out there, they're going to fence it anyhow. So we might, you know, I think that we just track this with what's allowed by.
This is probably, you know,
storage.
Some of the things that we have observed on the sites is that, you know, people aren't climbing fences. One of the things is that my contention is that the barbed wire at the top and the concertina at the top, it does absolutely nothing. Because if you want to get in, you're going to cut the fence.
Correct.
Well, this is some deterrent to cutting the fence. And if it's lower than the actual chain link, it's no uglier than the chain link fence. Mm-hmm. So if that's a, I suppose, yeah. Taste insecurity.
Well, why wouldn't you on the chain link fence, you know, the top barbed wire portion, why wouldn't you have it
actually,
out?
Actually,
what in, like in your picture?
Different places. Some cities won't allow you to face it out. Because it overlaps into the right of way if you're on the property line. It's different. We don't, you know, barbed wire can come down as far as we're concerned. You don't need that barbed wire or that concertina wire when you have the electric fence. You don't. In fact, Palm Beach County, again, that I'm working with right now, they are requesting that these people take this barbed wire down. So the barbed wire becomes another deterrent, and it's usually already there, but the point being that the electrified fence behind will keep them from cutting. They can cut the chain link, but then they've got that other barrier to get through. Now, people can defeat this fence because it won't kill you. What really makes it effective is that the signs say warning electric fence. We don't say warning, this is a safe fence, this is a pulsed fence, this won't give you a heart attack. We just say warning electric fence, and most people don't even attempt it.
Right.
So
plus it's a burglar alarm.
It is
well.
A burglar
so
alarm.
A burglar
absolutely. I think that's a very good suggestion that you make it only to the maximum allowable height on your street frontage and then allow it to be 2 feet taller on the sides and rear yards. That would be a great way to word that if you feel like you can allow it in the front at all for places like those rental places. They are typically rental places, and sometimes a trucking terminal will have it. Some of the older ones specifically have it more inside the interior so that the trucks can go around the whole border.
Any more questions?
I don't know who this is, whether this would be for staff or for you, ma'am, but do we have the screening on all fences? I mean, I still have the concern of a kid reaching through. Half of it's going to border sidewalks. I mean, and I know
we'll
it's not.
It explicit. We'll put it in its code that where it borders a residential, that it has to be a solid fence.
That's I mean, I don't mean just where it borders residential. I mean everywhere.
Everywhere?
I mean, just the screening.
Maybe where it borders a sidewalk, you could
public,
make it to where it has to be.
Residential
maximum,
area or
like,
public
access. Let me also speak to that. Then you make it very aesthetically, you make it a little more aesthetically unpleasing to your city because then it brings out, mm-hmm. you notice it. Right now,
yeah,
if you leave it like it is and you screen it against residential, then the passersby, again, a passerby will not come in contact with this fence, usually unless they're illegally trespassing. They have to be trying to get their hand through a chain link fence that they shouldn't be. If they're just walking by and running their hand along the chain link fence, they're not going to get anything. When you start screening requirements, number one, it becomes cost prohibitive to the businesses. Plus, it creates more of a notice. People notice it more. They say, "Oh, why is that screened now?" Or "What's behind there?" If you leave it where street frontage just is the same height, you won't even notice those lines.
What about a hedge, about a 3 foot hedge zone at the front?
Again,
it's like this one. It's a lot like the one that. Is on here.
Well, don't we? I mean, we require.
We have some requirements, but there might be some areas where we don't have a requirement for that screening in the front if it's not a parking area, per se. Usually, you.
Well, you got the. If you got outside storage, you're going to have.
Yeah, you're going to have to have.
You're going to have screenage. So, I mean, I think that you already got that. So, I don't know that we really need to.
There's a lot of sites. I mean, KWI doesn't have anything. I mean,
it's old.
That Wilton Mulch area where they're parking.
Yeah. I was going to say there's no sidewalks anywhere, so well, I don't think you're going to be walking by them.
Well, if you were going to say there was a range from...
Right, so they would have to plant some landscaping.
If you were going to say there was a range from 4 to 12 inches, that couldn't exceed 12 inches, then maybe on the frontage it could be 12 inches.
That'd be good, too. And if you say screening and you mean landscaping like bushes, I'm sorry, that is fine.
Yeah,
I thought you were talking.
Talking
I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about a
no,
wall
no,
or
no,
mesh
I
screening.
I was.
Oh, okay.
Well, yeah,
I'm trying to do.
I'm thinking about three. I understand. I don't want to be cost prohibitive. I understand the aesthetic, and I certainly want to do what's best there. But the biggest concern for me is the safety. And I know what I'm hearing. I'm sorry, but I'm. It's tough to trust, you know, the statements about the safety when we're talking about electric fences, and we're going to see incidents where people reach through that are not trespassers or there for criminal reason purposes, and you know, like I'm just envisioning a kid doing this, and the safety issues on my mind.
Little Robbie in the sissy test.
Yeah,
right.
I'm a trial lawyer. I'm sorry.
I can show you.
I was just waiting for you to bring up the liability.
Yeah.
You can't prevent a kid from running out in the street in front of a car or bus either. So I mean.
If you create the hedge zone, if you create the 4 feet with a hedge in it, I mean, I think you're far enough, it's a pretty long reach. You'd have to actually try to touch it. Then you'd have to, I dare you to touch it, Rob.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well,
that's
what you're trying to protect against.
And if a kid is stupid enough to do that, then he needs his, you know, his parents.
Rob's going to be touching it.
You know.
I would have talked him into
make
it.
Make his parents come reach in and touch it. So,
so what you're saying, Pete, is that if we limit
metals,
that the electric fence can be no closer than whatever green space
that's right.
has to be provided
at the front,
and on the front, then that would give that distance. And
I have a video that I shared with staff. It's about 15 seconds of me actually touching the fence and three other people. If you want to see what it does.
If you have a stun gun that does the exact same thing.
No, a stun gun goes off, a taser goes off 19 times a second and it penetrates the skin. It's much more dangerous than this fence.
We don't really care. We just want to see
it. I mean, I'll be happy. It's on my laptop. All I got to do is pick it. It's booted up. All I got to do is show you if you want to see it. If you're concerned about safety.
Rob, do you want to see it?
No, I mean, if it's too much trouble, don't worry. No, don't worry about it. I trust you. I do. I just, you know, safety is... Number one.
He's a new dad.
Ahead of his
I understand. And that's what makes it so effective.
A trial lawyer and a new dad. So.
Well, you were saying before between the chain link fence, you said 2 inches or something
yes.
like that.
The hole in a chain link is usually about 2 inches.
I mean, you're talking about a small kid that would be able to get through there.
And then their arm probably is not 12 inches.
Their arm is small, so I mean, yeah, it's not going to be the middle school kids probably that are going to be doing it.
Oh, I can tell you, having a son, he managed to live to adulthood, but he was the prototype for the kid that would reach to the fence, you know, to touch it. And I always felt like if he did it, then hopefully he learned something. You know, so.
And if they do it once, that's probably going to be the only time they do it. And they'll walk away unhappy but not hurt.
Okay. All right.
Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Okay.
The way the code reads for B5, for Dubai, if somebody wants to put outdoor storage in a new B5 or a new place for outdoor storage, you can't be in the front yard. It has to be in the side or rear yard. And you could go down, and it has to be screened with either berm or a wall, or it could go down to a fence. You could do a fence with some landscaping. Same way with the M1, if you want to put outdoor storage, you could go down to the fence. So it doesn't follow the 122.260. There's certain requirements of the B5 and M1. Now the M2, where some of these uses, there are no requirements for outdoor storage in the M2. So you could possibly have it in the front yard.
And it's more likely as we go with the new code, there may be an increase. I think we talked about this, an increase in outdoor storage, but it's for the light industrial, which would be most of the M1 and M2 sites, it would be in the rears and sides.
It would be in the rear and side yards.
And the B5 would still be
in the front.
So the heavy industrial would be the only one in the front.
Let me just quickly show you this. It takes like 10 seconds. Can y'all see that? I know it's not on your screens, but it'll be evident of what's happening. Oh,
Did you get a bonus for this? You better have. Let them shock you.
We were actually in a staff meeting, and the CEO says, we're going to go touch the finish. And it was good. I'm glad that I touched it. Now, shoot.
And I know it's not exactly, but you're trying to wear your Gamecock colors down here, too?
No, I'm a Tar Heel. When I left the house this morning, it was like 40 degrees, so it was chilly.
So you have NC State colors on?
That's true. That's true.
This is me. And if you look, you'll see. There's no red marks. There's no black marks. Nothing on my hand.
Did you cuss?
I said, ouch.
I heard a bunch of beeps as you were.
Do what? A couple of
I heard a bunch of beeps. Something was getting beeped out there.
Wasn't it? Unedited version.
Exactly.
Now, Peggy did touch it. That's why she has curly hair.
How long did you grab it?
20 seconds.
Oh, dare.
I held my tongue when I was going to make a comment about you, Pete.
I might have touched one along the way somehow.
All right. Okay. All right. We want to make a...
Well, it sounds like there's maybe some editing that needs to go on it.
Well, we need to add... Yeah, I could summarize. Yeah, well, we need the distance from the electric fence to the... To the fence in front.
3 to 12 inches.
3 to 12 inches.
Yeah.
We need to include
3 to 12 or 4 to 12. Because I think you said the guidelines were 4 to 8.
Yeah. I would be okay with whatever the current guidelines
are. Yeah, I'd say 4 to 8.
That way.
Yeah, that way we can say we're going by the international guidelines.
Is within some recognized guidelines.
Right.
Okay.
4 to 8 inches. Okay.
Second one is that in front, where it's allowed in the front, that it does not exceed the height of the top component of the fence.
Correct.
That's in front of it.
Okay.
All right.
And the third is that, there are two more.
Shall not exceed 10 feet.
Shall not exceed 10 feet, which I believe we have, right?
Well, it says shall have a height of 10 feet.
Yeah, shall not exceed.
Maximum height. I think you wanted to, other than the front property line, the electric fence would be no more than 2 feet taller than the perimeter fence?
Correct. Yeah, that's what she said. And then the other masonry, the alternatives to a...
Right.
Requirement for a solid fence?
Yeah.
Right.
Front, now let's talk about one more thing.
Yeah, on the front, or we, if somebody has outdoor storage, but they don't have a fence right now, would we allow them to put a fence in there? I mean...
Well...
How are we going to keep them from not if we're going to allow it everywhere else?
I mean, they could put
it. It would be a non-conforming use, and basically you're allowed, putting the fence in there would be continuing that non-conforming.
This doesn't require a permit, does it?
And they already had a fence. I mean.
Well, I'd like to keep the fences along the streets to a minimum, so, I mean.
If there's no, the intent is mostly to.
I mean, I'm concerned about.
To secure outdoor storage.
Right. Putting language in there where we're saying, I mean, yes, it's non-conforming right now the way the code is. You're in the B5 and you have storage in your front. It's fine, but we want to continue it.
My thought is you allow it wherever the code allows outside storage. Okay, so if the code allows outside storage in the front yard, you're allowed to put the fence up. But if it doesn't allow it, you can't put the fence because. In your case, what you're saying is a non-conforming use, you don't want to justify the non-conforming use.
Well, we have uses like Grandview Equipment Rental and KWI, where that isn't necessarily outdoor storage.
Some of them outdoor.
That's outdoor display.
If it's like outdoor display. Companies, we don't consider that outdoor storage. That's part of their operating business.
Well, like KWI's got a fence around their whole thing, so. They'd be allowed to do it, wouldn't they? Because
that's what I'm trying to.
Yeah.
That's where somebody that does not have a fence right now.
Or somebody doesn't currently have a fence.
But they have outdoor storage, or they put outdoor storage. Then,
right.
I mean, most people don't. I mean, they have a fence, I would guess. I mean.
Does the code currently prohibit them from putting a fence?
Right.
Just a chain link fence in the front?
Well,
in the front of the property?
I don't think it prohibits them, but it's not allowed to have outdoor storage.
You don't have to pull a permit for that chain.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Now I'm talking about, you said that there are B5 sites, or that there are sites that currently have outdoor storage that are non-conforming. You don't want them fencing that in. Is there current code restrictions against fencing?
No, not against fencing. Here are the two. There are a couple of. There's a distinction that's going to need to be made, I think, at staff level. Some of it is, you know, uses like the sale of the horse trailers that are special exceptions in whatever zone that is, but that's something that's a sale. Now, those horse trailers are displayed outside 24 hours a day. So that's a sale. KWI is rental equipment. You know, that, again, it can be displayed outside the whole time. So I think that staff's going to have to make the distinction as to whether that is allowed to be outside. And I'm trying to get a gauge on what your intent is.
My intent would be to limit the amount of fencing and everything on the street as much as we possibly can, however we can do that. Okay, now.
Yeah, I guess my thought is that if they could put a chain link fence up right now, what's the real difference? You know, I mean, if you take a look at the way this electrical fence looks and everything, and if we've limited the height to what it can be, I mean, if they're allowed to put a chain link fence up, I'm not sure that I see the difference between allowing them to go ahead and put a
electrical
fence behind it.
Well, I agree.
So, I mean, if the code allows a fence, they ought to be, I mean, I didn't think that I was originally going to think that.
You just don't want, and I think both of your intents are the same, you don't want to create new storage areas.
Right, yeah, you don't want to.
Right?
Well, even if they put a fence up, if they're not technically allowed to do it by code, they can't do it.
They can't do the storage.
They'd be in code enforcement regardless of whether there's a fence up there or not. So, I mean, I think that to make it simpler, you know, instead of trying to define everything down, you just say, well, if they're allowed to put a fence up, this they can use the electrical fence.
Based on this criteria that we've outlined.
Yeah, and as long as it's in that zone.
If there are some distinctions that y'all would like to work staff to work on, I'm happy to, you know, I don't know if this is a time-sensitive issue that action has to be taken tonight or in order to perfect the ordinance that we, you know, maybe postpone it to.
What about the possibility of just allowing this in areas if it's intended to, you know, protect outside storage, only to allow it surrounding areas where outside storage is allowed? So on the non-conforming pieces, if they wanted to go in and put an electric fence, they're only going to be able to fence the area that the code allows for storage. They can still store stuff out front and they'll stay non-conforming, but they're only going to protect the objects within the electric fence within the area that the code allows. So what if we just limit the electric fencing to?
Well, if you're displaying something, I would assume that you would be displaying it during work hours, correct? I mean, you can't display something permanently out front, or can you?
Some cases you can.
Outdoor sales and display is different from outdoor storage.
Right.
Some people can't put it in before, but you have to take it back out. But
that's what I'm saying. I mean, if they put it out front and then they put it in the back at night, right?
Yeah.
It'd be not
outdoor storage.
That'd be the time you'd be most concerned about having it protected, would be at overnight or over weekends or whatever.
Yeah, move it to the back.
So you don't need it in the front there.
Well, but I was just thinking that there may be these cases where they're not technically outside storage, they're outside displays where people keep it all the time.
The two uses are the horse trailer sales and display and the equipment rental and sales. Mm-hmm. Those are the two uses that I think people would want to use this product for.
Yeah, I don't really have, I mean, I honestly don't have a problem with it either way.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't think it's that big of an eyesore.
Yeah, I'm probably like,
yeah, what?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that the Sun Belt, for instance, I think that place looks fine. I mean,
they are.
It doesn't really.
I think they've
it.
Got a decorative fence around the, on the.
I mean, it's more when the buildings start to get really junky that you're really starting to notice.
Yeah. It's a faux wrought iron.
Yeah, they've got a faux wrought iron fence on the 27 frontage. I think what we talked about, it sounds like we're kind of, for the most part, on the same page. If y'all would, if staff would like to move forward with it based on what we've discussed so far, I'm okay. If you'd rather put it off till next month.
Well, I think we got the 4 inches to 8 inches separation. We've got the top height at the front, not to exceed 10 feet and no more than 2 feet above the allowable height of, or above the height of the fence on the side and rear.
Solid fence.
Solid fence at residential property lines. Then we're down to where we allow outdoor storage, allowed where we have the land development regulations allowed allow outdoor storage, or do we want it to include areas that for outdoor sales and display within those zones?
I would say to give staff a chance to kind of take a look at what we've got around and make a recommendation and bring it back.
Yeah, and the whole issue about expanding a non-conforming use with fence, the fact that we don't, that this is not something that's going to require a permit is, now.
It does.
If the electric fence requires a permit, the applicant may have already expanded a chain link fence anticipating electrical fence, and then when he comes to get the electric fence permit, finds out that he's going to have to pull it back to the front of his building on non-conforming sites. So.
But if we're putting another interior.
Right.
Do you need a formal motion to table?
Yeah, I guess we need to make a motion to table it with
Mr. Chairman,
with those recommendations that Pete outlined, I guess, right?
Mr. Chairman, I'll move that we table it to our next meeting and that staff develop language based upon the conversations that we've had about those points.
I'll second.
Okay. All right. Got a motion and a second. Everybody good with that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Call the roll. All right. Call the roll.
Mr. Kesselring?
Aye.
Mr. Howell?
Aye.
Mr. Batzel?
Aye.
Mr. Gibney?
Aye.
Mr. Greiner?
Aye.
Motion carries to table.
No, we got table to our next meeting.
Which table to the next meeting.
That's right.
Meeting.
Yep. That's right. Stupid Ocala Loader.
Yeah, I know.
Miami, South Beach, Ocala Loader.
Way fine.
Yeah, baby. Ocala.
South Beach.
Hey. Miami, Ocala.
Now, Peter, you doing the wayfinding thing?
I'm doing it, yeah.
Okay, I was just going to say, council already likes all this, don't they?
Yeah.
So I move approval.
I'll just explain.
Oh, can we get, let's let Ty work a little bit. Guy never does anything.
Oh my God.
And if I don't want, I want to tell him.
On?
It's recorded now.
Thanks, right?
The reason why we need the wayfinding ordinance, yes, council did hire a company to do the wayfinding logo and the wayfinding signage package, which a draft is included in your packet, and we've been going through meetings with our leadership group and a couple city council workshops to approve the signage, and they have approved and draft the signage. The final package is coming back, but what
we missed our invitation to those meetings, I guess.
Yes.
Did you get lost in the mail?
You were there. There at some of them. Pete must have been.
2009 or something? Or what are we talking
about? Sorry, I was supposed to call you.
Yeah, I'm sorry. And so what we're doing tonight is allowing just to do some cleanup. I looked in some codes on wayfinding signs, don't have any mention of it. We've been putting up signs in right-of-ways and on public property for years, DOT, schools, whatever. Everybody's been doing it. We're just defining it, that is a definition of what a wayfinding sign is, and it is exempt from the permitting process that you would go through typically to get a sign. So there are 19 other exemptions in the code, and so we're adding that in. So that's what it's doing. from the code standpoint. And what we'll do a little bit further, which is going to be the more difficult thing, is to come up with wayfinding guidelines in terms of who can put up a wayfinding sign. And that's going to really possibly ruffle some feathers down the road. What can be on a wayfinding sign? What can't be? Do we want to allow schools? Do we want to allow churches? The thing is, right now, DOT puts some of those signs up. People go directly to DOT. Once we get our wayfinding signage package approved through DOT, then it's all going to be on the city. So the city, and they expect the city to have guidelines that we're going to have to come up with. So we're going to have to determine what would be allowed on wayfinding signage. So we could have some issues. You know, there's a lot of signs in the city. We've taken pictures. I mean, if you go down the state roads or just one of our local roads, every 20, 30, 50 feet, there's a sign or something. And so we're going to try to, the goal is to try to clean that up as much as possible. But that's going to come later. And I don't, that's not going to be an ordinance. That's just going to be a policy that we'll get council to see if they want to buy off on in terms of what is going to be actually approved and in the future what is going to be taken down.
All of these would be in the public right of way. Is it?
Yeah, yes. Or could be on city owned property. Yes. I mean, some of the signs that we are looking at, the gateway signs, may be on city owned property. In a rare case, it may be something we may have to acquire an easement for possibly some gateway signs. But they would be non-commercial. The intent would be there'd be non-commercial signs. There'll be advertising destinations that are listed, that we're going to have listed. We're going to approve which ones that would be part of the package. But like I said, we do have a lot of signs out there. Churches, schools put them up. Normally, just what they're telling me, what I've looked at, like elementary schools, they really shouldn't be on the signage, possibly for high schools, because they're more of a destination where elementary schools are. Typically, everybody knows where the elementary schools are. And then into the churches, which, you know, again, those are really not destinations, but they are. Sometimes people need to find where they are. So those are some of the more difficult ones that we're going to have to come up with. Do we want to keep those or not? Any input from y'all on those? That
just issue? Make it consistent so that.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be the case.
You don't have editorials favoritism and.
Right.
You know, this church is on there, this church isn't.
Well, that's what DOT is going to come down on us if we, once we adopt the wayfinding signage. It's like, right now, they're like, fine, you go through all this, great, you know, go at it, city. But once you do it, it's on you. It's going to be your responsibility to enforce it and maintain the wayfinding signage. They won't be coming to DOT to get a permit to put up a sign. They'll be coming to the city. So we're going to have to make those tough choices. And yes, I mean, we're not going to be able to say, hey, let's have one sign here and, you know, for one church and maybe not the other. So we're going to allow them or not allow them across the board. So
that sign on 17th Street pointing the way to your house, I mean, we can maybe have two or three of them.
It's coming down.
The guy who knocked all the power out at the Florida LSU game.
Or killed the mailman with the tree. That was an interesting story last week, almost. Missed them by that much with a tree.
So this is okay, so what do we need to do then?
It was Phil's fault.
What's the deal with the blue giant circle? That's our official sign now.
We're the big O.
That's the big O.
O-Town.
Big zero.
I mean, it's like we're Waldo, where's the O at? You'll see the O throughout.
And the bubbles coming off
feel
the top
the o.
of the Ocala.
The what?
Are those bubbles?
No, they're not bubbles.
It's everybody with a BB gun.
Oh, you mean this one?
The target
practice. Those aren't bubbles?
No, those are bubbles. Those are O's, multiple.
Oh, okay. Multiple.
Target practice. That's target practice, true.
Might be truer than you think. So did Ty's presentation fulfill everything that you were imagining?
I wasn't going to vote for it, but after that, I think I might.
Hey, Ty, I know there's going to be descriptions of what we are, like you just discussed, what we're going to allow and not allow. But number four, like three and four, where you get into, you know, business signs near non-signalized intersections that identify businesses down on a secondary roadway, stuff like that, that could get out of hand.
Oh, that's the existing stuff in the code right now. Yeah, so okay. All we're doing is number 20 is wayfinding.
Oh, you're just adding it?
Yeah. I'm just adding wayfinding signage. Okay. All that was in the existing.
You don't have the code number?
Forget that.
I thought you were worried.
I read all that for nothing.
I thought you were worried some kids could climb up on there and get
maybe we should take
stuck
that out.
You could get your head stuck
actually,
in that
true
thing.
You know what?
You get your whole body in there.
Hopefully this never becomes an issue, but I got her on record saying that it can't injure anybody. So she better hope it doesn't. Oh, she's going to hear that again.
Exactly.
Mr. Chairman, are you ready for a motion?
Time for cases in here.
Hey, I'm just saying.
She yeah, I guess ready for a motion. We got
I'll
motion.
That, this yeah, we're approving the ordinance, amending the sign regulations to add the definition of wayfinding signs.
Okay, we've got a motion for approval.
Second.
And a second.
Some of number four would take care of it, but we added all the
that's right.
I've got a motion and a second. Call the roll.
Mr. Kesslering.
Aye.
Mr. Howell.
Aye.
Mr. Batzel.
Aye.
Mr. Gibney.
Aye.
Mr. Greiner.
Aye.
Although for the record, I think this board could have come up with a design on comparable, a comparable design.
We could have split that fee, couldn't we?
That's right.
Merge. All right, anybody got anything to add?
You have another one.
Oh, we do?
It's not in here.
Aren't you going to address?
Oh, do we have to actually
table? Yeah,
do we have to formally table it?
Actually, we'll withdraw it and re-advertise it. We're not sure what we're doing.
Okay, yeah, we don't have to.
You don't have to
do anything.
Oh,
right. All right, anybody got any discussions or anything?
Yeah.
We good? All right. Meeting's adjourned.
You're not from here. You came from somewhere else.
Yeah. And it's.
All right.